listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Yesterday, a couple of people told me I was telling it like it is within 5 minutes, and I question that. I want to get to this Ross Tucker audio first here because it's a big 2025 season. At least we thought so. Here's Ross Tucker on Afternoon Drive yesterday on how many wins it would take to save Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry's job.
I don't think there's any number. I really don't. I mean, I don't think they'd be operating the way they're operating if they were looking at it that way. And they shouldn't. If you're Jimmy Haslam, okay, are you going to sign off on, like, the Travis Hunter trade and trading down and so many of the moves they made? You're going to sign off on that stuff, but then if they win 3 games instead of 5, you're going to fire them? Or 4 games instead of 6? That seems pretty stupid. I mean, that seems really short-sighted for an organization that does not appear to be operating that short-sighted. I think that they, barring something unforeseen, I think they're back almost no matter what.
I mean, it does feel, I think, to a lot of fans like we're going from one extreme to another. Like, you were so quick to fire Rob Chudzinski. You were so quick to fire Mike Pettine after he had an idiot drafted for him as quarterback. And then this is continuing here. And the reason I brought up the telling it like it is thing here, Anthony, and I kind of want to, this is going to be therapy with you because we got Jason coming up at 7:20. You know, Jason's got the bedside manner of a hammer. I stopped in Brook Park yesterday. I went to the liquor store in Brook Park yesterday. I want to say hello to Jim Bob and his son, James, who I met. Met Jim Bob yesterday. And they said, and one person said another thing, then I went to a grocery store and...
Then another liquor store in the grocery store?
No, there was no liquor store in the grocery store. That's why I did the liquor store first, then I went to the grocery store.
Had an open bar.
And there you go. And there was a nice checkout lady named Maria. And I swear to God, they both go, you tell it like it is. And I go, have I this summer? Or have I been telling it like I want it to be? Like, you know how many hours we've spent talking about a quarterback that might not even hit the field this year? Like, we just assume, and I'm like, why have I spent so much time grinding over a quarterback that might not even hit the field this year? And by what we saw, I'm just going by what we saw and trying to read any tea leaves we could back on Saturday, bud. They have no problem drafting another quarterback ahead of him for next year. Why did we spend so much time? Because I don't think I've told it like it is. I think I'm telling it like I want it to be. I don't want this season to be like 2016 or 2017 where there are no consequences. I know guys got fired in 2018, but there are just no consequences whatsoever to anything. That you can do whatever you want, and it doesn't matter about that. When the trust from the fan base, if you want me to tell it like it is, I'll tell it like it is. The trust from the fan base is eroded. The people can't believe, the hardcore Browns fans can't believe going, wait a minute, why doesn't the scoreboard count? All of a sudden, the scoreboard doesn't count? We have people tweeting at us all day yesterday after we played the Cat Hickman audio going, data points. What the hell are we talking about with data points here?
Yeah, really.
Why are we looking at what's on the scoreboard there? Why are we on the opposite end of what we should be so many times? No one answers for that.
Well, you asked.
And I'm going to have to wait another year. So I'm getting ready. Real quick. I got Friday, Saturday, Sunday after today. I got 4 days technically because it's 7 o'clock today. I got 4 days before a game on my first week of the season. Sunday football starts tonight on Westwood One on the Fan. And I just got to wait until April? Yeah. You want me to tell it like it is? That's telling it like it is. It's just no fun whatsoever. Like, Shador Sanders is fun. Talking about the guy who might not even get on the field is fun. 40-year-old quarterback, so we're talking about maybe 4 or 5 games. What's the fun in that? No offense to Joe, nice guy. What's the fun in that? Talking about quarterbacks that none of us think is going to be a franchise quarterback, but could be a very nice backup for a decade in Dillon Gabriel. What's the fun in that? There's no fun.
Well, the only consequences we've seen so far for this regime or anybody, it's been Alex Van Pelt to, you know, Ken Dorsey. That's it. All right, I'm going to give up my play calling duties. Now I'm going to get him back. So that's all you've seen, you know, after all these years and just one playoff win. Obviously, it's been a bit of a roller coaster. There's been good. There's been more bad than good. And then last year, you kind of bottomed out, but then everybody kept their jobs. Normally, when there's a bottoming out, nobody keeps their jobs.
Exactly.
Normally, it's a house cleaning. But for the first time in many years, this is a head coach that's given you reason to think that, hey, if certain things are aligned the right way, that they can win and that, you know, he does have an offensive mind. I know that it's been a big point of contention. You know, Nick in the afternoons, Nick Wilson brings up, well, he's only had, you know, one top 10 offense or whatever. How is that an offensive guru? But, you know, you look at the quarterbacks he's had, and I don't think Stefanski is as good as Kyle Shanahan, who has been able to get to the Super Bowl with, you know, average quarterbacks. Or below average quarterbacks. Yeah, I don't think he's that, but I do think, you know, if the stars align correctly, he has proven that he can conduct an offense not only respectably, but also, you know, above some of his peers. I have seen some of that.
It just feels, again, to tell the truth, it just feels more and more like the season's a formality. And I'm being sent more and more. And again, we're 4 games away.
Well, that's up to them to prove otherwise.
And that's why I think Sunday against Cincinnati is so important, man. If you go out there and you get boat raced about that, like you did against Dallas last year, then I think a lot of people are just going to be checked out by the end of the month. If you go out there and you win on Sunday against Cincinnati, and you can, you got a good I think you're going to have a good defense again. And I think your offensive line, now that they're healthy and you got veterans there that are Pro Bowlers, I think you can try to run the football. I know that we can talk about Quinshon Judkins and the missing link there all we want, but I think you can try to run the football. And as long as you don't turn the ball over, I think you'll be there in the fourth quarter and you'll have your chance to win the football game. And if you win the football game, then I'm going to come in here and I'm going to celebrate on Monday. But I'm always going, but until I get to a point in the season, and I don't know where that is, I'm always going to be wondering when the shoe's going to drop. Because even if they win on Sunday, I'll tell you, by Wednesday next week, in the back of my head, I go, you know, there's a lot of teams that aren't very good that win week one because it's sloppy football. What are we going to do in week two? What are we going to do?
Oh, wait, we've been
what
that
are we going to do against Baltimore, a team that's supposed to win 15 games?
We have always split the first two games,
dating
all the way back to 2017.
And
like
then,
it's pretty crazy. As bad as we've been, we don't lose both games. So that's always been able to keep the fans invested.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm looking right now, Kenny, the thousands of tickets available for the opener. That's never happened since 99. That has not happened for this team.
Because I'd like to think that a lot of people agree with me on this. And I hate to do it because, again, how many hours have we spent living in a fantasy land? Like, we've had a lot of people going, guys, why are you talking about the fifth-round pick who's the third-team quarterback? Well, it really was the fourth-team quarterback at the time. Because...
Well, that's obvious, though. That's Joe Flacco's
because,
your starter.
Because I did... Because
what does the rest of the league think of Joe Flacco? He didn't have another starting job.
Because we didn't want to accept the reality of the situation. We did not want to accept the reality. The reality of the situation is simply they'll go as far as Joe Flacco has wheels, and then when the wheels come off, then we'll start to figure out whatever else, but we don't have a whole lot of faith in either of them. There's hope, but I don't think there's faith in Shador Sanders. So if there's only hope but no faith in Shador, then we're putting any faith we have into the guy who is Garrett Nussmeier or Drew Aller or Lenore Sellers. Like, I'm watching Lenore Sellers like a hawk.
Yeah,
I'm watching Garrett
Nussmeier
like a hawk. And we're going to be talking about those guys all year. And so even if they win on Sunday, then I'm going to be wondering against Baltimore. If they lose at Baltimore, which they very well could, and they will be an underdog against Baltimore. All right, what are you doing to bounce back against Green Bay? What are you going to do? Like, I won't be comfortable one way or the other until I either know, and I don't know when that's going to be, that they're good this year, or what I know that they're not good this year. And it seems to be that we'll know that, if we're being realistic, a lot sooner than we would if they were good. And so if I'm being told, I tell it like it is, I got to tell it like it is. That if they don't win on Sunday, or they don't at least play well and keep it close, you go out there and you do what you did against Dallas, or God forbid, I know it was Freddie in a different regime, you do what you did against Tennessee, or even, you know, with Kevin's first game against Baltimore, for crying out loud. You do what you did against Baltimore, it's going to start to feel a lot like 2016. It's going to start to feel a lot like that, where, you know what? We exist. This is an existing team. And I'll feel like I've wasted time, and I feel like a lot of fans have, and maybe we've wasted Miles' time and Denzel's and yada, yada, yada. Well, they're not doing it for free, so they get money. They get paychecks, and they get paid a lot of money to do it. I hate that Joel Bitonio's last season would be on a losing football team, but you know what? It's the way she goes. Because, man, I just feel like I've lived this fantasy all summer where, man, maybe there's something – I can cling to this year and not have to. I don't want to waste a season. I don't want to cheat myself. I don't want to cheat the listeners going, hey, we got a big game coming up on Sunday. Finally, you wait for football for 8 months and finally we have football. Now you're going to have to wait another almost calendar year to get to April.
Well, were we not buying or are people not buying when Vegas, basically everybody has told you this is one of the worst three teams in football?
I think in the back of our head we did. I didn't want to. There's the truth and then there's the truth you're willing to accept. And I wasn't willing to accept it.
Like I heard Nick in
still,
the afternoon.
There's a part of me that doesn't.
Yeah,
want to.
I heard Nick in the afternoon say he couldn't in any of the possible outcomes. The one he couldn't see was a blowout loss. And I'm like, nice. Just saw it last year. Yeah, they can absolutely get blown out. It's Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. Of course, they can blow us out.
And we have audio of that we're going to play later on. By the way, I've been there before, Nick. Don't worry, buddy.
Yeah, and we were supposed to. We came into last year thinking we were going to be way better than we think we are this year. And that team,
do you understand?
Got absolutely blown
like,
out.
I kind of used you as a therapist. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, I think I've been. There's people who've been living in a reality, and I think I've been living in hope.
We've been talking Shador
instead of being
because we don't think the team's good. That's so, yes, why you talk about a fifth round quarterback.
Yesterday, Ken, you brought up you wanted to just win enough for everyone to keep their job, right? Was that a living in hope thing? Or was that a not telling it like it is thing? What was that?
I can't say it's even a living in hope because somebody asked me that on social media and I thought I was very clear on myself during the show yesterday, but it's a long show, so maybe they missed it. The reason I'm that way is because only two times in 25 years have they fired somebody and actually got better. And one of them is with Kevin. That's not a good track record. That's not a good track record whatsoever. Considering the other guys that you're coaching against have been in there most of those 25 years. That's terrible. And so, yeah, I'm afraid that, God, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I think Kevin's a good offensive guy. I actually do think Kevin's good with quarterbacks. I know there's going to be a lot of people disagree with that one, but I do think that Kevin can be good with quarterbacks. So I'm going to start maybe with a worse person with my franchise guy who's getting ready to play his week two college football game on Saturday. That's a scary proposition in its own right. I'm not trying to be scared. I'm just trying to be honest. And I think this entire summer, I have sat here and talked about this team on what I want them to be as opposed to what they really are. And I still don't know their identity, and I won't find out until Sunday. But what I think a lot of people think they really are is a franchise waiting for April of 2026.
Ross is not the only person to feel this way. The amount of people lining up to be like, it's no, they're back no matter almost anything. It's like, the math just doesn't math. You don't have to be anti-Stefanski to say coaches that have two playoff seasons, playoff caliber seasons and one playoff win in six seasons, and the other four would be losing seasons. It's very rare those guys ever get a seventh season. I would damn say, it never happens because
right.
It never happens.
You,
and it's just a wild blank check to write these guys going into this season.
So you don't get that runway, 100% right. But I think the part that people are missing in this, or at least because they're not living it the same way that we're living it. That's just the reality of it. And because we know how the Deshaun Watson thing went down. It has been reported through Cleveland.com. It's been reported through The Athletic. It was, now again, we don't know the originator between Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, but we know Bart and Ernie made their way up to Jimmy Haslam. And collectively, they said, this is what we want. We want Deshaun Watson, and then Deshaun Watson and the big push that Jimmy Haslam made was matching the money and getting the money that where it needed to be. But the original idea came from Barry and Stefanski.
Mm-hmm.
We are holding them accountable with that thought process as if they are the ones that came up with it. They should be held responsible for it. Meanwhile, Ross and just talking about how this all plays out was like, well, you know, we don't really know who came up with it. We don't really know how we got there. And it's like, well, you know, you're omitting the obvious reporting that's already taken place here.
Yeah.
And so you're giving Stefanski and them a pass in that regard.
Well, and you're taking too much stock into Jimmy Haslam's own words, where Jimmy Haslam said, hey, you can put that one on me because I'm the owner. He did that because if he came out and said it was these two guys, but I love these numbskulls, so they're getting another year, no one would want to work for him if he did move on from either guy.
Right. And I think what Jimmy in saying that, I think he was playing with the idea that everyone was
already blaming him.
Already trusting the reporting that was out there with the idea that it wasn't him that came up with the idea. Like Haslam wasn't on his couch one day and was like, I got it, guys. Deshaun Watson at all costs. That's not how it's been reported at any stretch of this whole entire ordeal.
I just think it's interesting with Stefanski specifically. And again, I don't want Stefanski to become the new Deshaun Watson. This organization last year was so steadfast on there's nothing that can happen to this guy playing football this year where he's not going to be out there. We're going to play him until it is painfully evident that we are out of playoff contention. In a way, the Achilles injury saved us all another half season of strife watching him flail around in an offense that was incomplete, that didn't fit the rest of the personnel, and quite frankly, didn't end up fitting Deshaun Watson either. I don't want that to be Stefanski. It stinks when you don't get your pound of flesh. And what I mean by that is not that that means just because you're bad, Kevin should get fired. But the idea that it's the resolute idea of, well, doesn't matter what they do, they're back no matter what. They haven't earned that. And I understand, mm-hmm. and I do, listen, I really do understand that the Browns themselves might think, and Jimmy might think, for some reason, despite bringing these guys back for year six, I have not shaken the allegations about me as an owner, about how impetuous I am, about how involved I am. And by giving them another year, another blank slate, maybe I can beat those allegations. It's like you can't. And by the way, giving Stefanski and Barry 6 years, that is going to buy you. Coaches are going to look at this and go, oh, two winning seasons in 6 years?
Yeah, like he gave it a runway. He tried.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe I can do more there with those resources that they've given that if I was in Tampa Bay, I wouldn't get.
And here's another thing I'll give Haslam a little bit of a benefit of the doubt with that I think some people are punishing for. It's like, well, you wouldn't have this big plan and take Andrew Berry with you to all these different colleges and all these different games unless you wanted him for next year. And it's like, well, hold on, take a step back for a second. And why? What do you think he's going to do? Just say, no, no, Andrew, I don't want you on the flight. I'm going to scout these guys on my own? How do you think that's going to work?
Okay, Deep Podesta can go, but Andrew, yeah, Kevin, Andrew, you got to stay back in Berea.
Just not enough room. But hey, I believe in you this upcoming season. Like, you, like, think about what message that sends in general. If you tell them, no, I don't want you here. No, you invite them on the trips. You see what their thoughts are. But you can do that with the understanding that they might not make it to the end of the year.
I think the way people talk about Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski as if there's a dramatic difference between the two. And I'm not talking about in Cleveland, because if you've watched these guys for 6 years and you believe in Kevin more than you do Andrew, I think that's an okay take because you've watched the games. You've lived and died. You've bled with this team. Well, right?
There is a difference between the two.
Well, okay, but nationally there isn't. Outside of Cleveland, there isn't, other than one guy has two Coach of the Year awards and another guy doesn't.
I mean, for me, the difference is pretty clear, and I think Chris Moeller actually put it in an odd enough way. He put it in a way that I've been thinking about for a while, but I enjoyed hearing him say it. I think Kevin Stefanski's got a strength. I think he would be an awesome, great, fantastic offensive coordinator. It's not a head coach. It's a great offensive coordinator. I don't know what Andrew Berry does well in general
trades.
At this point.
I trust him with trades for the most part.
He can get you a value if it's an Amari Cooper type deal, something mm-hmm. like that.
I mean, I think the trade he got, the trade he put together for trading down from 2 to 5 when it was a wide receiver cornerback and not a cornerback.
Have I been undervaluing his trades? Because I feel like,
but I agree with the overarching point that it's the Kevin thing's more provable than the Andrew Berry thing.
I just know with certainty. I mean, there's a lot of NFL guys that it can make different trades, and maybe I need to give Andrew a little bit more credit for that, that he's better than that than maybe I think. I really don't like his drafting ability so far. Maybe this last class will start to turn that around as well. But like with Stefanski, if he's an offensive coordinator of a team, I think very highly of that team.
Yeah, but not if he's the head coach.
But there's a difference there.
But I just thought it was interesting that, and I thought the Morning Boys did a good job in asking their guests, do you think Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry are good at what they do? The number one thing, and this has been a trend you and I have observed and commented on for a minute.
Yeah.
The biggest defense of Kevin Stefanski right up front is two coach of the years. And by the way, they're valid. He earned them, right? You could make a case on any given year, 5 or 6 guys deserve a coach of the year. And the 2 years he won, you can make a case he deserved them. It wasn't fluke that he won them.
Right.
That also,
he still barely edged out Jonathan Gannon for the 1 year.
D'Amico Ryans.
You're right about that.
I don't know why I corrected you on that. Like that was
no, but you're 100% right.
You say Jonathan Gannon.
No, but you're right. I just misspoke there. But like, but it was a neck and neck voting process. And like, would we look at it differently if it was one coach of the year instead of two coach of the years?
Well, and I think that's the
thing. Or would
thing.
The national media that like, is look at it different?
Like, I understand if you're in Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, or Baltimore. Well, he can't be that bad. He's got those coach of the year. I get it. But I just look at it and go, okay, how long can that in a playoff win 5 years ago carry me while trying to evaluate him? Because my biggest problem with Kevin is what Chris Mueller said today, which is I think he's a great offensive coordinator. I don't think he's proven to be a truly great NFL head coach.
Right.
I think part of the coach of the year was he took over for Freddie Kitchens. The expectations were finally low for that team. And during an awful season of COVID where there were myriad of challenges, first year in the door, wins 11 games. Like I think the coach of the year awards specifically tend to be, oh, that team overshot expectations. Same thing in the NBA.
Right.
I already don't feel that strong about the award in the first place as some moniker of greatness. So I don't know how long that can carry you as your analysis on a guy that we've got cold hard data on. He's had one top 10 offense, scoring offense in 5 years. He's had two winning seasons, two playoff trips, and one playoff win. Mm-hmm. At some point, that has to matter. Like what he's actually earned has to matter more than what a vote happened that is subject to narratives and human bias.
Yeah, I mean, Belichick's got it. He's won the award, I think, three times in total. Like, it's not. But, like, look at the odds right now for Coach of the Year award for this upcoming season. Vrabel's got the best odds to win that award. It's like, why Vrabel? Because Vrabel took a year off and now he's with the Patriots and there's an ascension that's going to happen there. Ben Johnson's got the second best odds. Why? Because he's with a brand new team. If he actually does something with Caleb Williams, that'll be the most impressive. Liam Cohen, first year head coach, just like Ben Johnson, he's third best odds. Jonathan Gannon, fourth. Matt LaFleur, like, there, you see how this is working? This isn't working as if they actually think the best coach is going to win this award ever. It's the best story. And unfortunately for Kevin Stefanski, I guess fortunately for Kevin Stefanski, people just don't remember that.
216-474-0092. How far do the Coach of the Year awards carry Kevin Stefanski? Like when you talk about what the job that you think Kevin does, how much of that is the estimation? And we got Jim in Strongsville. We'll get to him in the next segment. It's the out that I think if you're trying to give this to Kevin Stefanski up front, you already have made up your mind. I don't think you have to do that yet. That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Well, look who's here.
Yeah.
Yeah, look who's here.
I just figured I'd do a nice, comfortable hour and a half show. That'd be great.
Looky. He didn't even bring a cookie. What the hey?
Nothing.
Have you join us. Glad you could fit us into your schedule.
You know, sometimes it's good. But if you need a dissertation on how concussions work and concussion protocol, I'm all here for you.
You're out being a good dad.
Yes. Oh, man.
So at least you got that going for you.
I did. I did learn a lot today, though. I did learn a lot, man. I got my PhD in concussion.
Well, welcome back.
It's good to be
back. Andy Baskin, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo.
So here's what we're talking about, because I know you were riveted to your radio coming in.
Why do people hate Kevin Stefanski? I don't understand.
Why do local people not seem to like him? He's on the hot seat, according to Fox Sports and Yahoo, and they say he shouldn't be. That's what they say.
He's on the hot seat, but he shouldn't be.
Shouldn't be. But he is because of ownership and because if you lose in the NFL, you get fired. But they seem to think he's a good coach.
Yep, I agree with
Jim in Strongsville. What do you think?
Jimbo. Hi, Jim.
Not that I think he's a bad coach. I don't. And I just think the national perspective is that Jimmy Haslam is just the worst of the worst and makes every decision in the organization and that nobody else has any hands in it. Look, Jeff, you said earlier that one of the things was Kevin Stefanski has been dealt the worst quarterback hand. He had a hand in all of that quarterback situation. He could have made it work with Baker Mayfield.
That was Fox Sports who said that.
Okay. He's the one that, like, look, we all said it.
Wait, what's the hand he could have had with Baker? Baker wanted to leave. He got mad because the front office was looking at Deshaun. What does Kevin have to do with that?
Well, first off, Andy, something happened during that season that obviously soured the two's relationship. We've all said from the time that he kept trotting and injured Baker Mayfield.
There's no proof. I love you, dude. I don't know if there's any proof of that it's already tried to play through injury. And, you know, he wanted to be out on the field. He knew it was a contract year. I have a lot of trouble blaming anything Baker on Kevin. I blame a lot of it on Baker. I blame a lot of it on Jimmy Haslam. I blame the front office for putting it in front of him, saying, "Hey, let's go get Deshaun." Kevin's the one guy I agree with a lot of things you say. I'm not putting Kevin in the mix on that.
I'm sorry. I just think that I'm disagreeing with you. I think Kevin had a strong hand in that. And listen, Jimmy Haslam didn't come to the front office and Kevin Stefanski and say, "Hey, let's go get Deshaun Watson." those guys brought it to him because the reports out at the time were that Jimmy liked Baker. So I don't buy that. I just look. Nobody can tell me that.
Here's the part that. Here's the critical part to that story. They started courting Deshaun, and Baker got mad. That's all there is to it. Do you think that after Deshaun said no, the Browns wanted to just make amends with Baker and make this thing work? And Baker's like, no, I'm out of here. Which, there's a part of me that doesn't blame Baker for feeling jilted because he had brought some success that we hadn't seen yet. But I'm not reliving this. I don't see the Kevin part of that. I see the other parts of it. I don't see the Kevin part of it. That's
okay,
all.
Okay, well, here's the other part of it. I don't trust Kevin Stefanski to develop a quarterback. There were obviously personality conflicts. There's plenty of blame on Baker, plenty of blame on him. I don't trust Kevin Stefanski to develop a quarterback. He hasn't shown us that he can do it. He can't show us that he can manage the ego.
Was he going to develop Deshaun Watson? Were you expecting him to develop him?
That's not on him, but it's on him to say, oh yeah, I can work with this guy. You think they would have brought him in if the head coach didn't sign off and say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea?
The head coach normally doesn't even have a say in that.
Jim, thanks.
Again, how many times have we heard coaches say, hey, I can only coach the players that I have? That's true. When you have a front office that's picking players, that's the way this thing works out. His job is to be a teacher. Hey, is he maybe failed with DTR? Okay, all right, I'll give it to you. But DTR wasn't his focus. Deshaun was at that point. So I it's very hard for me to get mad at Kevin over what we're talking about here.
Two of the national outlets have Kevin on that hot seat.
Okay.
I thought, all right, let's see what folks think of him overall. So doing a little checking. The Sharp Football Report.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Sharp Football Analysis. In ranking head coaches, has Kevin ranked 17th in the NFL? Now, none of these are great shakes, but I think a lot of folks here think he's 25 and below.
They so let me ask you, 17 in a bad season, does that get you fired?
Well,
probably.
Yeah. 17th, they say this, votes for Stefanski ranged from 12th to 25th. Although he's a two-time coach of the year, no team fell further from expectations in 2024. See, that will get a guy fired.
Okay.
If you do that again, I'm convinced if they followed up with another 3-14, they have to make a coaching change. And I would say a front office change. You can't do 3-14 2 years in a row.
Unless the owner is taking everything on his own shoulders.
Which could possibly be.
Sure.
RotoPat, which runs on NBCSports.com.
Got rid of some weasels in my yard, too.
They have Kevin at 16th. It's tempting to grade the Browns' job on a curve. Adversity doesn't begin to describe the typical Cleveland working conditions. That was their little synopsis of it, and they said a little bit more, but I won't give you all of that. And CBS ranked Kevin 13th among NFL head coaches, and he said it's almost unbelievable Stefanski's just 4 games under 500 for his career, given the regular dearth of roster stability in Cleveland. Does he have a hand in Brown's quarterback misfires? Hard to argue otherwise. Agree. Still, his squeezing a couple of playoff bids out of decimated lineups, including one fronted by the likes of Joe Flacco and Kareem Hunt, affirm his helpful touch. So, folks around the country, I think a little more highly of Kevin than we do here. Coach D is in Maple Heights. Some of those Mustangs.
Coach D.
Oh, Mustangs. wanted to talk about Kevin Stefanski, guys. I heard a few guys made some very valid points, in my opinion. If you look at Kevin Stefanski's career, even before he came to the Browns, he's had top-tier talent in the NFL. I think he had Stephon Diggs. He's had Baker Mayfield. He's had, Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry. I want you to ask yourself, how many out of all these top-tier guys, I'm going to include Deshaun Watson in that as well, how many of them have played better under Kevin Stefanski's system? How many have left Kevin Stefanski's system and had a better career?
You tell me who's left and had a better career. I would say Baker. Other than Baker, tell me another. Tell me another. It wasn't Odell and it wasn't Jarvis.
Oh, I will agree with you as far as left, but how many have had a better career before coming to him?
Well, but that happens all the time in the NFL, Coach D.
And then I would also add Stephon Diggs to that list as well. When he was in Minnesota, he struggled with Stephon Diggs as far as how to use him, and Stephon Diggs was unhappy in his offense. So I think a lot, the way a lot of the fans see it right now is we lose a lot of top tier talent because they don't fit in Kevin Stefanski's offense for whatever reason. I'm not going to blame him. I think he's a great X and O's coach. But for some reason, we have to acknowledge the fact that he seems to struggle with top tier talent. When Deshaun Watson came here, he was a top five quarterback. Now, obviously, hey, he had the off the field issues that affected him. Obviously, no one can deny that. But also on the field, he never looked like himself. We never got the most out of him as well. So we just have to look at all of that, the big picture. I think he's a great X and O coach. But when you look at all the top-tier talent that did not perform well in the system, we have to acknowledge that as well.
Coach, the only thing I would argue with is the top-notch talent. Odell wasn't the same player when he got here. I could make the argument that Jarvis wasn't either. He got a lot out of Nick Chubb. And he got a lot out of Kareem Hunt.
He definitely did. We definitely ran the ball very well. But, I mean, he was supposed to be a passing quarterback guru, correct?
Running quarterback guru, maybe more than passing.
So, I mean, I would just like to see him have a little bit more success with the young guys that we brought in now. I don't think he should be fired or he shouldn't be on the hot seat, but I do think we have to acknowledge the fact that he struggled with guys that were considered top-tier talent, and then he got them. And for whatever reason, whether we want to say they were old or they had off-the-field issues, for whatever reason, the common denominator is that when he got top-tier talent, they didn't perform better in his system.
All right, Coach D, I'd argue with you about the top-tier talent. I think this offense has been lacking top-tier talent just about the whole time Kevin's been here. Jarvis was a good wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, Nick was a good running back.
Nick was premier.
Yeah.
Odell wasn't the same player, and he had a good year here.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to argue with you on here.
Johnny's in Berea, taking a break from his activities at the Browns headquarters. Hello, Johnny.
Johnny.
That's right.
Or are you a BW?
How we doing?
Good.
So I have to disagree with everybody, especially that last caller. We haven't had any top-tier talent. We can count it on one hand what we've had.
Nick Chubb.
I don't think Kevin's a bad coach. Yeah, we can count on one hand.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. Coach. I do.
You have to look at this. He went 2 years without having a first or second-round draft pick. He was forced to keep Anthony Schwartz on the field for God knows how long for whatever reason. He hasn't had a quarterback to develop. And for the people that saying he can't work with quarterbacks, he took P.J. Walker, DTR, off the couch Joe Flacco to the playoffs. What else do you need? Maybe it's not the coach. Maybe we have a problem with the GM. It's just my thought.
All right, Johnny, thank you very much.
Hey, man. Thank you.
Johnny's not obviously calling from the upper offices in Berea.
He's at the auto body shop right next door.
That might be.
Which they do a fantastic
they
job.
They do, yeah, really do. Yeah. Kevin's in Cuyahoga Falls, thriving Cuyahoga Falls.
Hey, Kev.
What's up, Kev?
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Very well. What's a good word?
Front Street looking good, by the way.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. Yeah, a little wet, but it's okay. Yep. Hey, Andy, a little tip. Although I'm a CPA accounting guy, mom was an accounting professor. Tip of the week, don't ever use a semicolon. Find a comma and a coordinating conjunction, and you're all set, man. You don't have to worry about it.
So. Oh, thanks, man. I feel you are my Grammarly. Thank you. You had
That's
me a
it,
colon.
Man.
Thank you.
Just forget about it. Okay. So in regards to Coach Kevin, unless he was the guy running into the room and pounding his fist on the table saying, I have to have Deshaun Watson no matter what, there's no reason to get rid of him. I mean, really, I'm old enough to remember the Ricky Williams trade, and I thought then there'll never be a trade in the NFL as bad as that. And then the Browns topped it. And I think we should all agree that the Deshaun Watson trade was the worst trade in the history of the NFL. So really, whoever was responsible for that trade is the one that should be fired. Now, if it was the owner, sadly, we can't fire the owner. But if it was anybody in the front office or if it was Coach Kevin, then yeah, there's a case to say that guy needs to be gone and never, ever, ever be involved with football ever again for the history of the world. So, I mean, that trade set us so back on so many years, and it was just awful. It was horrible. So, I mean, unless they could say Coach Kevin was responsible, I think he's done an amazing job for what little talent he had. And Jeff, you read a great article. Fantastic use of the word dearth. That is exactly
what describes
the talent.
Wasn't it, though? Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's what we've had in Cleveland, a dearth of talent. We've had a tiny few couple guys. Other than that, we have not had star players at a large level on this team for years. So I don't know where people are saying get rid of Kevin. Frankly, I think he squeezed a whole lot of lemon out of the tiny lemons that they handed him. So I think he's done a phenomenal job considering what limited talent they've given him.
Kevin, thank you very much. Kevin in Cuyahoga Falls will move to the next community. It'll be Steve in Akron. Hello, Steve.
Ah, I feel like we're just driving south on Route 8.
Yeah, we're heading south on Route 8.
Okay.
Going to get the interchange.
Yeah, on the road again. Yeah.
Are you backed up in traffic?
No, we're good.
Might as well be.
But if you're in Akron, you probably are.
On this rickety old bridge.
Construction's been going on for 17 years there.
There's a lot of traffic.
Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, I was just going to say, as far as Stefanski on the hot seat, he could be. I mean, if the season goes sideways and they win 4 or 5 games, I have no doubt in my mind Haslam will switch them all out, the front office, the head coach, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him bring in a coach first, somebody like Deion Sanders, to coach up Shador heading into the next couple years before we head into the dome. That's the type of move I think Haslam would try to make.
Aren't you interested to see what Deion can do at Colorado now?
Yeah.
I'm interested to see what he looks like now. See?
Well, we'll see what he can do with less talent this year than he had last year.
Bingo.
I mean, if he can coach him up, you know, to win 5-6 games, you know, and he looks, you know, halfway decent doing it and maybe pulls off a win against a, you know, a bigger school, it could happen.
Make the playoffs. Let's see him make the playoffs. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Steve. Thank you very
much.
Steve. How'd we end up on Deion Sanders?
Well, you wanted Deion to be the next head coach of the Browns.
I'm just going to move along. What do you think, folks? The national folks seem to like our coach. At least give him respect and don't blame him for the mess here. I agree. I think the guy can coach. I would love to see what he could do with top-notch talent, which I don't think he's had a lot of. It's Baskin and Phillips here on The Fan.
Hey, tell me you hope they lose. Because I'm not convinced that they would just fight. I'm getting, like, there are people texting us right now, mutual friends. Ken, you can't defend this. It's not a defense. I'm not defending it. There's nothing I can defend right now. How can I defend? How, guys, Ken's not told it like it is. I'll tell it like it is. You let Ken Dorsey run your offense. You brought in a offensive line coach who you quietly fired halfway through the year, who looked woefully ill-prepared for the job to the point that Mike Vrabel basically became your offensive line coach. Okay? You had whoever's call it was, you let Alex Van Pelt be let go some way, somehow. Okay? You've not been able to, and this is still, I don't care, it's still your job. You were not able to find a rapport with the quarterback that you gave $235 million guaranteed to. It's still your job. Still have all those things that are on there, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a few things. And then when I go to the other guy, you sign the guy for $235 million. You gave away 3 first-round picks for him. You've drafted 2 guys that in the second round that aren't even available to you. One guy we still haven't even signed yet, so I got to ask Mary Kay and Jason Lloyd and Russ Schneider and anybody who will ever come on about whether or not that guy's ever going to be able to be here. Maybe even Kevin Kugler, for all we know, coming up at 9 o'clock. Like, there's no I'm not making arguments for either one of these guys, but if you're sitting here, and I got people from, again, we got outsiders, oh, they'll keep their jobs, they'll keep their jobs, they'll keep their jobs. Where are we convinced that, yeah, if they lose enough games, they're going to keep their jobs? So you might as well hope that something goes right, because it seems that they're going to be holding on to it. And if they're going to be holding on to it, I can't imagine, with the little faith you guys have now, I can't imagine how little faith you're going to have even going into next April when they go to draft the quarterback next year.
Yeah, but devil's advocate, if you don't...
Devil the advocate it up.
If you don't like the coach or the GM, why would you want them to win enough games to stay?
Because they're going to stay. It seems they're going to stay anyway.
I don't agree. I don't think they will. I think it'll be, as I said, I think it'll be really hard for them to keep their jobs if they follow up a 4-13 season with what? 5-12 or worse?
They didn't do what the fans wanted this last winter. What's to say they're going to do what they do this winter? And again, if they go firing anybody,
then you'll have 10,000 tickets available at next year's season opener.
If they go firing, well, no, because you're going to have Garrett Nussmeier, Lenore Sellers, or somebody, and people are going to want to go see them kids. You know that. I mean, Joe Flacco is a nice memory, and he's 40 years old.
Will he even be playing in week one? Or will they sign another 40-year-old quarterback to play to keep the rookies at bay?
What's Brian doing?
Which is what they did this year.
216-474-0092. Like, do you even want to win? Q in Cleveland, hello.
Hey, how y'all doing?
We're doing wonderful, Q. Go right on ahead.
I was just telling the other guy when I got on is that basically it's probably going to be one of them takes where, you know what I'm saying, it's going to shut down everything, but you can do both. Like, you can just let it happen organically and just, you know, because quarterbacks like Bo Nix, there's a lot of quarterbacks that's in this draft, right? And why not just win as many games as possible and then just let it happen organically? The quarterback drop to us, like the one that's supposed to be for us. We don't have to wait. We don't have to lose and get like number one or number two, because basically he's going to be known as a first round quarterback no matter what. We're going to get a first round QB, and he's going to be respected as that. He's going to be touted as that, and he's going to have to live up to that. So,
well, there is like a, what, 50-50 like, bust rate in the first round right now for quarterbacks. So I don't know that all first round quarterbacks are created equally.
Jordan Love was great. Jordan Love, pretty good. Then you got Lamar Jackson.
Then there's Will Levis.
He went 30-31.
I mean,
yes.
Well, I mean, but you also better you better hope that these rookies then play well to give people any faith in Andrew Berry to pick a quarterback going into next year. You better hope Carson Schlesinger is a defensive rookie of the year candidate, and that Mason Graham is great. You better hope.
Then we set up. You feel me? Then we set up, because all we don't need then is another playmaker maybe or something like that. Get our first round QB, and hey, even if you really think about it, never know. Shador still might be good, or Dylan.
Well, that's still going to be the point of getting the two first round picks. And thank you very much for the call, Q, because the odds are somewhere in the top 3 to 5, there's going to be a team that ain't in the market for a quarterback that you can buy their pick from. And that's where the second first round pick comes from. So, yeah, I mean, you can do a lot of things at once. And that's why it's so frustrating with this team, because I don't know what their identity is. The other teams in the AFC North, whether I agree with them or not, they have identities. Do they go the way Joe Burrow goes? Joe Burrow is the entire organization down there. Joe Burrow got a not so great organization. I know they lost right before he got there, but they weren't the worst of the worst of the worst for so many years before he got there. But they were not good, and he has become that organization's heart and soul and culture. Some guys are able to do it. We have not been able to find that guy. We have forced it too soon on one player in particular. They will go the way Aaron Rodgers goes in Pittsburgh. They've decided to throw all their eggs in that basket. And when it comes to the Ravens, they are going to be a complete football team led by a two-time MVP, where they have culture falling out of their pockets
but
over there.
The caller's right in one regard. Like, yeah, I disagree, because I will have somebody be a second-round pick, but, you know, Michael Penix, right? Or Kenny Pickett. Those are first-round picks, too. They're not all created equally.
You said Will
I
Levis?
Do, yeah, he was a second-round pick. But I do agree with the caller, like, let it organically happen. Yeah, I mean, me rooting for or against them is not going to change that organically. They're picked to finish, you know, one of the worst teams in the NFL. They might just organically lose a whole bunch of games this year.
I just think it's really silly for anybody to root against the Browns.
You don't have to go out of your way to lose. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, but I just think it's really silly for anybody to hope the Browns lose so they lose their head coach and lose their general manager, when I don't think anybody's convinced that they're going to lose their head coach or lose their general manager, because there's plenty of people around the league willing to line up and say that it wasn't their fault.
Yeah, but then it'll be 6 years and, you know, one playoff win and four losing seasons.
Just one more year with one playoff win and three losing seasons or four losing seasons.
How many coaches and GMs in the NFL? I don't care what the owners say.
Not many. How many coaches?
Owners always say, they always give votes of confidence. What did Jason Lloyd say? He got a dreaded vote of confidence for one of the coaches, and then 2 weeks later they got fired.
I understand.
Why are we assuming that couldn't happen
here?
You
ask me how many coaches and general managers, da-da-da-da-da, and I say, how many teams have won a division since 1989? We are different from everybody else. Get to that.
Have we been? We've kept this regime for, this will be 6 years. We just said that's a top
and,
10. Isn't
and
that,
they it, could finish with 4 wins, and you could have them for 7.
And I don't think so. I think they are gone. 4 wins, I think they're both gone.
Vince in Cleveland, you're next up on the Fan.
Yeah, how are you guys doing this morning? I really don't understand the draft picks this year with two quarterbacks. So you're going to tell me that in 2 years you're going to take 3 of your picks on quarterbacks? Just doesn't make any sense to me at all. Either Dylan Gabriel or Shador Sanders, doesn't matter. I'm rooting for them both. Put them in, let them play. Let us see what we got. We can draft next year with all these first-round picks we have for linemen and wide receivers. You know, our offensive line's getting old. Our wide receiver room is pretty weak. I don't understand how you can burn three picks.
You're going to hate my answer.
Find a quarterback.
Vince, you're going
to
hate.
And the other thing, the one other thing that I like to say is, you know, you guys a month ago had some expert on, I don't understand how Stefanski gets a pass. These products that come out of the NFL, that come out of college, going into the NFL, are pretty high quality players in the first three rounds. I just can't get how he keeps getting a pass. Makes no sense to me.
Well, about that, again, I think everybody outside of Cleveland just loves him. And I think that that is what makes Jimmy Haslam and everybody fear moving on from him. And myself included, I have to admit that. But you're going to hate this answer, Vince, and it's not my answer. It's their answer. So don't go after the messenger here. I got to let you go, but turn your radio up. Thank you very much for the call. I want you to hear this, is that they will look at it and – if you draft, this is their reasoning. If you draft a cornerback in the third round and that guy's a bust, you're really not going to get much from him. You're not going to be able to trade for him. Your thought is if you draft a quarterback in the third round and he goes out and he plays and he looks like a capable backup, you're going to get a pick back for him. Like it's more possible you have to cut a guy in another position. It's more likely you can trade a guy who's a backup that you can get another pick from. That's where they come off with the conversation that quarterbacks are currency. It's like you were at, like there was, again, you traded a fifth rounder and Dorian Thompson Robinson for Kenny Pickett. You traded away Kenny Pickett. I thought I'd rather have the reps to the kids. There were plenty of people lining up going, no, Ken, it's a win. It's a net win because they get the fifth rounder and it's a higher fifth rounder. That's a lot to go through just to get another fifth rounder, but fine. And it'll be the same thing with Dylan Gabriel. Like, I don't know if you're going to have to just flat out cut Dylan Gabriel or cut Shedeur Sanders. Like, you might be able to get sevenths and fifths for those guys. Now, that's a big net loss if you get a fifth out of Dylan Gabriel when you gave up a third for Dylan Gabriel with the pick. But that's the way they'll look at it.
I don't
he either
think,
hits or he becomes another pick.
I don't think them taking two quarterbacks in the third and fifth round have any bearing whatsoever on them drafting a quarterback next year in the first.
No, it doesn't. That doesn't either.
And the Browns will get into their regularly scheduled slot for the rest of the season, with the exception of that game in London, which is a 9:30 a.m. kick. They are your team for 1 o'clock on Sundays. Book it. Feel good about anything you need to do to schedule around it. They are your 1 o'clock Sunday team, your Cleveland Browns. Kind of special the league was able to accommodate them in that time slot, don't you think?
I love NFL games at 1 o'clock on Sunday.
I know you do. You're a big fan. I get it.
Always have.
Good with that. Jeff, again, by the way, Kevin Stefanski again at 10:55. Chris Rose at 1 o'clock. And then we're also going to hear from some of the players along the way throughout today's show, too, as they speak in Berea. Normally a quarterback day, so we'll see if that plays out as well. So, Jeff, as I was just kind of sitting around thinking about the Browns, and I think about some of the things that you say sometimes, because I kind of want to go, you know, a little bit and think about the way other people see this team. And unfortunately, it's the national media that looks at our team as I actually saw an ESPN article that had them at 30th today, which really was exciting for me because I'm used to seeing them at 31 or 32. So
that's great.
I mean, that actually felt pretty good. I was like, OK, somebody thinks they're not the worst team in the NFL. And I'm down with that. And I am optimistic right now. It's the beginning of the season. And you know, I think if you look at this team from a generic standpoint, you can understand why the national media has no hope and no faith in what we're about to embark on here starting on Saturday. And I think that the key to my thought process is, and it's something that you say, you know, you have a 40-year-old quarterback who's leading the team and two rookies. Do you really have a quarterback? And then you start to understand the whole notion.
Wait a minute.
I know.
That's what I say, and you get mad at me.
I know.
Now you say it, and I'm supposed to sit here and go, gosh, Andy, good idea.
I know. Isn't that weird? It's weird how these shows work, isn't it? If Dan wasn't injured, I'd bring him in on this. But I kind of understand.
Just helping orphans.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that.
The best.
Where's Crypto when you need him? Is it too early to talk about the movie, or are we giving it away? It's difficult because I don't want to give in to the dark side on this. But they have a starting quarterback who's 40. They have two rookie running backs.
I mean, if you really want to be, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic, I'm just kind of looking at it from a generic standpoint. They've got a middle of the road running back, you know, and a rookie running back and two rookie running backs, no matter how you look at it, whether you want to say Sanders or Judkins. You've got an offensive line that could be good, that we're hoping is good, but we do realize that there's some miles on those tires right there. You have one wide receiver who's established, and that was last year. And that's really your offense, kids. You know, I can be more optimistic about the defense because I feel good about the defensive front four. How could you not when Myles Garrett is there and you have one of the top rookies and you've got an experienced and a very good defensive lineman in Malik Collins and you're trying to figure out the other side with Alex Wright and Isaiah McGuire? I get that. I understand that. I have a little bit more confidence in that. The linebacking core is... We'll see how Carson is light. That's a great word for there. Yeah, I'll give you that. Light. And then I think you can feel relatively good.
Works for beer companies.
Yeah.
Hopefully it works for linebackers.
That doesn't make me feel better. At least we won't gain weight. And then, you know, the defensive backs, I think if we look at that and we say that's the strongest part of the team, a lot of people will tell you that. And I believe that with Denzel and Greg Newsome and Grant Delpit. You know, and Ronnie Heckman and Cameron Mitchell. So I, when you look at this team, Jeff, from 10,000 feet, I know you're going to agree with me. This is the problem. But look at this team from 10,000 feet and then ask yourself, okay, now I do understand why they have a ton to prove.
I've felt that way all along. The one thing I keep going back to, Andy, I'm so optimistic about the season because I love watching our team play football.
Right.
And this is one of those process things to me because I think there's a process going on here. There are a lot of young guys, and they're hoping to really get some things going. But I am trying to avoid thinking what my head is telling me to think. Okay?
Okay.
I'm trying to follow my heart.
Right.
My head tells me the minute that they traded the second pick to drop down to 5 and pick up a first-round pick for next year, that the team is telling us, can't wait till next year when we draft our franchise quarterback, and then we go. And it also makes me think, do you want to win 11 games? Because the worse your record, the better your pick in a really good quarterback draft, according to all prognosticators. So as soon as that trade happened, I thought, all right, are we trying to win it this year? You're trying to win? You're trying to compete? You're trying not to finish 4th in the AFC North? Or are you trying to set yourself up? And this is, I'm not even saying this is bad. This is part of it. Are you trying to set yourself up to get the best quarterback you think you can get out of next year's draft, whoever that guy is, and then you go? And Andy, that's part of the process here. And I can't even sit here and be mad about it. I get it. You just said it. You have a 40-year-old quarterback and two rookies who weren't even first-round picks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's problematic.
It is. I just... Are they built to lose? That's the question. Because I don't want to believe that. I don't want to believe that any team is built to lose, or are they built just not to win, and is there a difference? Is that a fair question? Are they built to just kind of compete, just kind of be around? Because I don't know if that is the – it's difficult because you don't want to give into that. But when I tell you a 40-year-old two rookies at quarterback, it kind of says you're built to see what you got for next season. I hate to be that guy because I like Joe Flacco and I do like the two rookies. So if you're hoping for success this year, quarterback-wise, they're really not – and then the other part of it, as I was listening this morning too, is that – when you look at the rookies, I mean, they're not even top 80 picks in the draft. It's a third and a fifth rounder. We've heard time and time again, you know, quarterbacks that are drafted outside of the first round, while it does happen every once in a while that you have one that has success, the odds are not in your favor.
That is correct. Now what do you do? Can you avoid sitting here and thinking, gosh, 2026, who's the quarterback going to be? See that? And again, I understand it. I actually think it's a pretty good idea. You picked up another first-round pick next year in what's supposed to be a great quarterback draft. You need a quarterback, clearly. and you have your pick and a team that's not supposed to be very good. Who knows which pick turns out to be better, but what's easier to control? How many wins Jacksonville gets or how many wins the Cleveland Browns get?
Well, that's what you got. You're right.
And that's
I'm not trying to be depressing about it. I'm just trying to see why other people look.
Can you lump those two picks together, Andy, and go get the quarterback you want? Maybe. Maybe not. Because maybe the team that has the number one pick, they don't want to trade.
But look at how many quarterbacks we're talking about for next season already that have the potential to be
first rounders.
Yeah.
About eight.
Yeah.
Eight guys right now are in that conversation to be first rounders, not first overall.
Which is different. And the other, yesterday I was walking into work, and I don't know if you know who Ricky Smith is. Do you guys know who Ricky Smith? He's the guy behind, it's a nonprofit. It's called Random Acts of Kindness. And it's a super guy. And you know, I just happened to walk by him, and it was one of those walking conversations.
He punched you.
No. Great guy.
Random Act of Kindness.
He took down basket. That is the greatest act ever.
Ricky, thank you.
No,
he set me up with the orphans I'm helping.
He looked at me and he goes, "Hey, what do you think?" And I'm like, and as I'm walking, and it was a little bit later than I wanted to be coming into work. I'm like, I go, "You putting me on the spot right now?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "I want to believe eight. I want to believe that they're going to win eight games." And he looked at me and he goes, "That's the worst place they can be. That's the worst. Eight wins is the worst place they can be because it doesn't get you to what you want for next year." And I was like, oh, man, Ricky was right. And then it haunted me as I walked into the building yesterday before we did our show.
Let me push back.
Okay.
Because if it's eight wins.
That's the high end for me, too. I think eight is the high end right now.
So if it's eight wins and let's say that Gabriel or Shador shows up.
Okay.
And plays well enough to help get you to eight wins. And you're getting that production, like Zach Zinter is playing and looks good. And DeJuan Jones looks like somebody you could build around at left tackle. And the defense is coming together and Carson Schlesinger looks good and Alex Wright is stepping. Like eight wins you can look at and the arrow is pointing up and you're like, oh man, we're in good shape. This is okay. This is looking a decent direction. Like that's... The doom and gloom that we all have right now is the fact that we could all swallow and deal with 3 to 4 wins if the arrow's pointing up.
True.
The question that people have is the arrow pointing up? Or is the arrow kind of straight across?
Okay, where is the arrow?
Until I see everybody on the field, the arrow seems like a straight line this year. And I think that's what's doing everybody in.
The only reason it's a straight line is because of the defense. At least that's the way I see it, because I just don't. The offense has a lot to overcome, but I do think that if the offensive line stays healthy, then I think the offense can hold its own, but just enough to put the pressure on to keep it even. I don't know. Up is where? Where is up on this thing? So I'm asking you right now. You tell me if you could look at this team, try to take your bronze glasses off for a second. Where are they realistically? And if they hit that 8-win mark, is that the worst thing that could happen to this team? 8 or 9 wins, that'd be the worst thing that could happen. Is it? I want to believe that's not true. Hi, JP. How you doing?
Hello. How are you today?
Feeling really well. That's I don't know how to do my job anymore.
Yeah, why is that?
It's a 4-day weekend.
Yeah.
Any weekend longer than 2 days, I do forget very subtly how to do this job.
Yeah, it's funny. I always feel like you need like a almost like a bullpen area. You know, you have like you just throw some audible pitches, so to speak. You just kind of get you warmed up and ready to go.
I should just do like call my friends in the business and be like, "Hey, Tuesday, like 9:30 in the morning, I'm going to need 10 minutes. You just ask me a couple questions just to get the engine started."
Oh, this is where our friends in Portland could really come into use.
They did not call me this week. I really could have used
Big time shocker.
I could have used that long toss out there in Portland.
Yeah, you are Portland's favorite, so there we go.
That's what people say about me. But no, I mean, it was great. We got the big Ohio State win, which, I mean, I did not see it. I did not see that coming, where Arch Manning didn't look like a pro-ready quarterback. I didn't think he'd look great, but I didn't think he looked that bad until like the second half. But it was a nice Ohio State win. We got the LSU Clemson win, which was perfect. And may I say, my quarterback Deadpool could not be looking better right now. Drew Aller won the game convincingly. Let's see. Garrett Nussmeier won the game convincingly.
Carson Beck won the game convincingly. It's good to be the king.
It's week one. This is why we have the Deadpool with each week. Yeah. It's week one.
Yeah, we should just get that right off. So you ready to cut Arch Manning?
No, I'm not ready to cut Arch Manning.
You are one bad Arch Manning a game away. If it happens this next weekend, you're going to be selling stock on that. And you're going to be stuck with...
No chance. The only way I end up... No. You know what's going to happen is they're going to finally let the governor off of him, and then he's going to do what Will Howard did in the playoffs last year, and everyone's still going to be fawning over him. And then I'd just be the idiot that dropped Arch Manning. Oh, there's a lot of things I want to be the idiot of, not the idiot that dropped Arch Manning.
Would you rather be the idiot that dropped Arch Manning?
By the way, as a second-round value pick, too, by the way. We need to in a three-round draft. I got him as a second-round
value pick. I got Carson Beck value pick in the ninth, the last pick of the draft, and he looked pretty good.
It's not great that like my big thing I'm hanging on to is a sweet Sam Lovett pick. Like that's not – I understand that's not great. That's not where I want to be.
He had 200 yards, I believe.
Yeah.
Sam Lovett. Good for him. Good for him, as we say.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But while we talk about the 2026 quarterbacks, or maybe 2027 quarterbacks with Arch, I do think it's been interesting how so much of the reaction this weekend, and one of the guys on the sidelines will actually be joining us at 3, Albert Breer, to Jimmy Haslam and Andrew Barron, Kevin Stefanski, being papped sideline-wise at the Ohio State-Texas game. A lot of people took big jumps into the sea on that one.
Well, what else? What other jump are we supposed to make?
It's the biggest game in college football, and it's right down the road. That, of course, they were going
to
go.
Please. And then, okay, fine. Then explain why they got on a plane then and then went to the other biggest game in college football at night. Is Jimmy Haslam just some like a massive outside of Tennessee Vols football, biggest college football fan we've ever seen?
I do believe that they send people to almost all the big games.
Okay, but does Jimmy go from plane to plane, and does he go and hop over from Ohio State?
I don't follow Jimmy.
And then go to the big game on Saturday night, and then go, well, you need to start Jimmy tracking, because that's what we're doing. When Jimmy and the whole entire crew goes from Ohio State, it wasn't just Ohio State, and you're going, oh, it's right down the road, and we can figure that all out. They then take the plane right after that game, as if they were as discouraged in Arch Manning as I was on Saturday.
So they just moved right on from Arch?
And like, let's go check out the next batch of quarterbacks. Right on the plane, right over to the next game.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there were a lot of assumptions made. I mean, Jimmy's the guy who's kind of famously said, what was it, 2 weeks ago, when he was like, yeah, I've heard he's not coming out till 2027 anyways. And that wasn't that part of the line on Arch Manning like 2 weeks ago when Jimmy spoke to everybody?
I thought Jimmy was one of the first ones he basically spoke on the Manning's family's behalf. Mm-hmm. But that again, are they planning for this year? Are they planning for next year? What exactly are they planning for? What I do know is that they were on the sidelines for what's supposed to be a generational quarterback, and then they got on their plane and went and watched Nussmeier versus Klubnik and what was supposed to be two of the top four quarterbacks taken in this year's draft. Like they're not being obvious about it if they're trying to tell us that they're not interested in these quarterbacks.
Maybe they just wanted to go to two really, really excitable games.
Oh, please. Oh, come on now.
I'll give you Clemson and LSU.
That sounds silly when you even say it. You know that.
I think the silliness is assuming that these guys have already moved on from 2025. Like, guys, you're always, if you have a second first-round pick the next year, will you be more invested, especially if you don't have a proven franchise quarterback right now? Will you be thinking ahead? Yes. It doesn't mean they've set sail on 2025.
Doesn't mean they set sail on 2025, but it definitely means that they are getting their prep and they're getting ready to go. Like I thought it was almost awkward how obvious it was what they were doing on Saturday, to the point where if I'm Dylan Gabriel or if I'm Shador Sanders, I'm like, wait a second. How am I supposed to feel about this if I'm those two?
I would probably look at my bank account every other week. Yeah, I'd probably look at that with the thing that says Browns direct deposit. I would probably just chill on that
and find out how much career backups can make in the NFL.
Well, no, I mean,
that's what I'd be relying on.
If I was Shador or Dylan, I'd be thinking to myself, I can be the guy that stops you from doing that. Right.
Okay. Like, so, and that might be a good sign. If Dylan Gabriel takes over in week 9, it looks good for a couple weeks. And instead of week 11, them going and watching Arch Manning or Drew Aller or whatever great quarterback seems to be playing great that given week, maybe that's a good positive sign for him. But it'd be really awkward if he's looking pretty good and then they still are making all these trips every single week.
And by the way, because they have two first round picks, Antonio Williams is going to be a top 10 pick this year from Clemson. I'm going to go ahead and say LSU's got a couple guys who are going to be, you know, top 30, top 50
picks
this year.
Ohio State's got guys. Caleb Downs is going to be
Texas.
Caleb Downs is a top 5 pick.
The idea that everything these guys do is about quarterback, okay, I can understand the Arch. I still think the Clemson LSU thing is more of a logistical thing with the quarterbacks than I do Ohio State Texas, where it's just, no, we've got a lot of irons in the fire in 2026. And, you know, just because they, but I want to get back to it because I know you've said, well, I don't think it necessarily means they've set sail. I think a lot of people saw Haslam, Barry, and Stefanski at these big games and said, well, do they even care about 2025? It's like, they're rich. They do not live like you and me. Right? Like, you don't have to, like, you can be invested in the 2025 season and still use your private jet plane to take people that work for you to these other places and get this going in the right direction.
But they haven't done that the entire time that Haslam has been owning the team already. And it's evidenced by the idea that Kevin Stefanski on the press conference yesterday said that was the first major college football game he's ever attended.
Yeah, but not Andrew Berry and not Jimmy Haslam.
No, like, we have seen this, both of those.
Assuming that Kevin is honest.
You think Kevin's not honest when it comes to going to a major college football game?
Do I think Kevin has fibbed before? And do I think Kevin likes to downplay things?
I'll assume the honesty when it comes to him never going to an Ohio State game or never going to a major game. The first time that he's ever gone to a major college football game with Haslam, I'll take him on his word with that. Because Mary Kay said not only did he mention that in the press conference that we all heard, but she said he's heard that from him privately before, too. This has been a thing for a while with Kevin.
I just think this idea that people are thinking the Browns are already thinking about 2026 is silly. I really think that, and I bet you there are parts of that locker room that would like nothing more than to stick it in the eye of people like us, who I've been saying this is a 3-win team since January, and I believe you have also been somebody that's like, this is a 5-7-win team, right?
5-6. I don't think I ever got to 7.
Yeah. All right. Let's go 4-6. It sounds more impressive that way.
I don't even know I did that.
But I do think, like, there are people in that organization, and by the way, Kevin's one of them. Like, Kevin is going to try and surprise everybody in 2025. And I think this idea that organizations pick and choose which seasons. No. The Browns didn't go all in this offseason because there were things limiting them. Yes, some of this became about 2026 when they made the Travis Hunter trade. But I think going too far into that, like, I guarantee you Kevin Stefanski's not like, all right, guys, hey, let's do the bare minimum here because we got to start thinking about 2026. When he's going into the locker room and starting to get everybody ready for the Cincinnati game.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing anything as far as telling themselves that they're not trying to win in 2025. But you can't tell me that wasn't a peculiar move in the way that the Jimmy Haslam flight charter went. Like, it was like, be less obvious about it in many ways.
But why? Why be less obvious?
Be as obvious as you want, but then people are going to make comments that you're disagreeing with today. Like, they're going to make comments about the idea that they're thinking about the 2026 quarterback class.
But again, like, the idea that it's just about quarterback to me is where it's like, they might just be putting more emphasis on this because they do have 2 first-round picks next year, and they're likely to have 3 picks in the top 40. Like, they might be looking at this like, hey, let's get ahead out of this because we've also not been very good at drafting until apparently this year where they drafted an all-time.
But then they also saw 3 out of the top 4 quarterbacks in this class. Like, it's not, again, like, it'd be, that would fly.
Two of the 4. Arch isn't in this class yet.
Arch is in this class. He hasn't declared or done anything with it, but, like, he's somebody you have to be watching and paying attention to in this. Like, I thought it was very obvious what I thought they were trying to do. I was surprised that they did it the way that they did it. And that's okay. Am I hating they were there? Of course not. Make your trips. Go do whatever you need to do. Find as much info and intel. Talk to as many people as you want to talk to if that's what you're really about.
NFL personnel go to the most widely anticipated 2 college football games of the weekend.
More
on the news.
No,
of
it's not just NFL personnel. It's owner, then GM, and then the head coach all together.
Yeah, NFL owners never go to college football games.
No, they do, but you're simplifying this in a way that you know is disingenuous.
I think boiling this down to they were only there for quarterbacks, that's not what you're doing, but that's been part of the discourse. And somehow that means they're out on 2025, I think, is distilling it to the dumbest standpoint.
I just think they're really focused in on 2026 in some degree, and they're trying to get as much research as they can.
Every organization in football is.
Well, yeah. So that's why I'm not making a big deal about it, and I'm not saying they can't do it. They should be doing it, but then you also then get to understand why fans are turning around and be like, oh,
little peculiar. They're at both of these college games that feature the best quarterbacks in the country. Oh, but then you can't turn around and tell us we're idiots for thinking that.
216-474-0092. At Nick Wilson says, at Jay Peterlin on social media. Social media reactions on X, powered by Chabon Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. We got Albert Breer coming up at 3 o'clock. He was photographed, sideline, Andrew Berry, Jimmy Haslam. What did they talk about? Was it all about the quarterbacks? He can answer this question for us. And what is 2025 about for the Cleveland Browns? Albert joining us at 3 o'clock. We got quick hits at 2:40. We got the Peterlin pass at 3:40. And Lance Reisland, Coach Riz, joining us. Cleveland.com. Oh, wait, that was yesterday. God, time is
I was going to say, surprised me with that one. Yeah. I was like,
That's on me. No Peterlin pass. But Lance Reisland is joining us, and threw myself off there, at 6 today. But are the Browns already planning for 2026 already? And Kevin Stefanski's bold claim of the return of Candid Jimmy in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.